driven to left field, hammered as a matter of fact, and that ball is gone. Iglesias flexing his muscles. That is a two-run bomb, and the Tigers have the lead.
And Boyd was pretty good in his last outing against the Kansas City Royals. He won that contest.
Oh, man, down he goes. Adios. Sano down on three pitches.
It was long. There's no question about that. We can play some long games, but I'll play as long as we have to, as long as we come up with a W. It was a little bit of a roller coaster. You know, we go up too early. They come right back with a home run the next half inning. We tacked on late, but they wouldn't go away, even to the point where they had the tying run on deck there in the bottom of the ninth after we had opened the lead up to four. Willie was able to get it done in the end.
2-2 hit well. Deep right. Bautista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
And their first walk-off win since the home opener back in April against the White Sox.
Corey Kluber on the mound, ready to go this afternoon.
Kluber whips the side here in the second.
Kluber
swung on and missed.
Strikeout number 14 for Kluber.
Slow chopper to Gonzalez, to Ramirez, on to Santana. A game-ending double play. The Indians sweep the Blue Jays in convincing fashion.
He's kind of set the bar pretty high in this game. When you're consistent, that's a good thing. But once you set the bar and you're consistent at that level, he's one of the best in the game. It's nice to put his name in there every 5 days.
When I went from leading to all of a sudden tied, I had a little bit more calm for whatever reason, and didn't really seem like it was my day for the first 12, 13 holes. And then for whatever reason, we were able to regroup, stand on the tee on 14 and say, we stole a stroke the last hole, and we're still in this thing. Let's make this a match play event going forward. They're all totally different experiences, and they all felt completely different. But this one, after, you know, over 2 years off of the others, and plenty of chances in between to win, this one is extremely, extremely satisfying. I will never forget this day. I mean, this is a special day in my life.
He wants to be number one. And, you know, sometimes you go backwards or downwards or to a weaker team or to a lesser team to be in that position. I openly admit that playing with LeBron James can be very frustrating at times. Most people would think that the side effects are manageable considering the overall thing that he does. But, okay, Kyrie doesn't feel that way. I question Kyrie's timing because I feel like the Cavs still have 1 year left of a great run. And if the Warriors stumble or there's an injury, they could hold another championship. And I wonder why Kyrie wouldn't want to go through one more year. But, hey, I'm not in his skin. He can make the choice. I think he's threatening his legacy a little bit here because he may view himself more like Kobe. Other people in the league view him more like Stephon Marbury, who broke up with Kevin Garnett and was never had the same opportunity in the NBA. But okay, let him go out and do it on his own. I question his timing, but okay, he's going to do it now. He's an incredibly attractive player, not only because he's 25 years old and an all-star, but this is something that's very important, especially in today's NBA. He is a marketable star. He is more marketable in some ways than Paul George and Jimmy Butler. He may not be a better player than those guys because those guys play both ends of the court. This guy is one of the most popular players in the world. His shoes sell very well. He attracts very well to young fans. And I'm going to just say that there are owners who are going to salivate at the business opportunity of trading for Kyrie Irving. And the Cavs' eyes are wide open on that. And that's going to affect their trade talks.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What is going on? Welcome to the Monday Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Toledo sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding Monday. My goodness gracious, we are loaded for bear today. We got a lot of baseball stuff. We got an unbelievably historic type of event from your boy Jordan Spieth, if you need him. Yeah, all he did was mess around and throw up a birdie, eagle, birdie. Or was it birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie? I think it was. Finished to come back from what looked like an utter collapse at the British Open to win his third major. He's now got three-fourths of the career Grand Slam, and he's 20 bleeping 3 years old. We can talk about that a little bit, and we will. We got a lot of things. Training camps opening up this week, too, in the National Football League. We'll get into that. But how can we really go anywhere right now other than to the big story in the NBA? The breaking up. Jim Cushlin, this broke, literally, this story.
Right.
During our show Friday from Highland Meadows at the LPGA Marathon Classic. This literally broke at that time that Kyrie Irving has told the Cavaliers front office, well, essentially Dan Gilbert, his boss, that he wants out. He wants out of Dodge. And ever since Friday, we have had nothing but story after story after story. Some of them blaming individuals for the actual story itself. Some blaming people for leaking the story. And yes, we'll get into that. Kyrie Irving's team is indeed pointing the finger squarely at the guy that word is Kyrie wants to get away from. That would be LeBron bleeping James. Yes, 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 yes. The world's best player, Cleveland's favorite son, and all of the rest. Our friends to the east in Cleveland, Jim, they will never point the finger of blame at LeBron James for anything with the exception of I'm taking my talents to South Beach. But he undid all of that by coming back and by winning a championship. I, however, have never forgotten the LeBron James that I came to know when I was out there in Cleveland working during the first 7 years of his tenure there. And I will tell you what, he is absolutely not above what they are accusing him of. He is not above, you know, being the alpha male that he is, being the petty, petulant guy that he sometimes can be, finding out that Kyrie kind of wants to go do his own thing, and leaking that to the press to make everybody hate Kyrie. And I'll tell you something else he's not above. Because, and let me back up here as we get going. And I welcome your calls at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065, anytime you want to talk. But let's back up a little bit. There's a couple of very interesting things going on here with the Kyrie Irving, I want to be traded rumors. One of the suppositions, one of the suggestions, one of the narratives is he wants to get out so that he can be the alpha male himself. He's tired of being little brother to LeBron's big brother. He's tired of being the guy that makes some of the biggest shots that need to be made to win championships, including the championship-winning shot two finals ago. A lot of huge, huge fourth quarter carrying the team moments and never getting the recognition because he's just Kyrie and LeBron. This is his team. A lot of people say, and some of the sources close to the situation say, Kyrie really just wants that. I want to be the big dog. I think maybe he looks at Steph Curry out west. Maybe he looks and says, I'm better than him, or at least I'm as good as him. And Steph Curry won back-to-back MVPs. Why? Because he was the primary dog on a team that included a really great shooter and an all-NBA guy named Klay Thompson and a great rebounding defensive specialist who can also do a few things. Now, I'm not a big fan of him, but Draymond Green. And the great Warriors teams that won 70 games, 73 games to be precise. The Warriors teams that went to back-to-back championships. One in which they defeated the Cavaliers in 2015, one in which they lost to the Cavaliers in 2016, and I'm notably omitting this past year because Kevin Durant was there, and it's arguable that Kevin Durant was the main cog in that championship machine. But for the first 2 years, then the runs to the title, and the finals anyway, and the 73 victories and the 60-some-odd victories, the best player on that team was the back-to-back MVP, the point guard Steph Curry. And it's arguable that Kyrie Irving says, I'm as good as he is. He might be a better pure, just, you know, straightaway shooter, which he is, of course, he is known for in that deep range, but I can get to the basket better than he can. I can shoot almost as good as him from out there. He's no better of a defensive player than I am. And everybody knows Kyrie's defense is suspect. And yet he won two MVPs. He was the main guy. I want to be the main guy on a team where I get a great shooting number two and then a couple of great all-around pieces to fit in around him. Like they got their Draymonds and, you know, they had their Bogutts and their Harrison Barneses and stuff like that. If he can win a title as a lone, well, not a lone, but as the big dog from the point, a shooting, score-first, playmaking guard, then I can do it too. That's theory or thesis number one, that he really, truly just wants to get away from LeBron's shadow.
Right.
The second theory, which I happen to put more stock in, the second thesis is that Kyrie Irving is sick and tired of waiting around for LeBron James to decide his future. Not just LeBron's future. When I say his, I use that pronoun in reference to Kyrie himself. My future is tied to whatever this guy thinks and says and does. He keeps signing these one-year contracts. This past one was a two-year contract, so he's got this year locked in. But then he's a free agent seemingly every other year. And every other year, I never know. Are we locked in long-term together? We going to do this thing? I signed a five-year max deal. He keeps signing one- or two-year deals. And every year, I never know if he's going or he's coming. Or going or he's staying. And if he leaves, and I'm stuck holding the bag here, and I don't have the other pieces I need to be the alpha male who can perhaps win a championship here, I'm going to be stuck here. And then when we lose, everybody's going to say, see, Kyrie ain't nothing in Cleveland without LeBron. And I'm Kyrie Irving, and I might not be all about that life. I might not like the idea that I'm hostage. I'm a hostage here. I'm locked into my contract. I've got a couple more years left. I've been here for the duration, and I'm still staying here. I'm locked in, and this guy might bail on me. I can't wait to find out what he's doing next summer. I can't just run with him for another season here, probably win the East again, go back to the finals, see what happens, and then have him say, hey, K.I., man, nice playing with you for 4 years, but I'm going to L.A. to play with Lonzo. I'm going to sign with the Lakers, and oh, by the way, already got word from Rob Pelinka, who's running the show out there with Magic in L.A., that he met with LeBron James' agent, Rich Paul, and that Rich Paul thanked them and commended them for their patience as it pertains to salary cap space and saying that we should talk at some point. What are they talking about? It ain't going to be they're not going to be talking about the training camps for the Rams and the Chargers out there in L.A. They ain't going to be talking about the McGregor-Mayweather fight. They'll be talking about number 23 being a free agent next summer. And, hey, boy, you guys did a great job of keeping that cap space open. Boy, oh, boy. Wonder what it would look like out there with a Lonzo, Paul George possibly, LeBron James, Brandon Ingram, Brooke Lopez type of a core. What are you thinking out there? Kyrie's got why? Kyrie is a lot of things. One of them is not dumb. He's not dumb. He's a Dukie. Even only stayed there 1 year, you've got to get into Duke. You've got to be an extraordinarily smart person to play at Duke for admissions purposes. They don't let you in at Duke just because you can run a 4-4 in football or just because you can, you know, you've got a 38-inch vertical in basketball. If you don't qualify for the classes, you're on the outside looking in. You're going to someplace, you're going to Carolina. Sorry to any North Carolina grads. But you're going to Carolina because they take athletic or academics just a little less seriously over there, it would appear, by a number of stories in the last few years. Kyrie Irving is smart, is the one I'm trying to say. He sees all of that. He knows LeBron is just biding his time. And when LeBron says, I'm out, he's left in Cleveland holding the bag. And he doesn't want to be left in Cleveland holding the bag. Can't blame him. Can't blame him even a little bit. So maybe thesis number two is the more correct one. Not the, hey, I want to have my own gig. Hey, I want to run my own show. Hey, I want all the credit. I want this, that, and the other. Although there's some ammunition for that fight, too. There's some points to be made for that argument. But maybe it's just he's leaving, and I don't know when, probably next summer, I'm not going to be stuck playing hostage to him. I'm going to beat him out of town. I want to trade. I want to get out now. And make no mistake, regardless of which of those two theses or theories is correct, and who knows, maybe it's a little bit of both. Maybe it's, I really don't want to get stuck here. I don't know what he's doing or when he's doing it. He's always leaving it up in the air and leaves people like me hanging. Besides, I wouldn't mind kind of getting my own show. I wouldn't mind getting my own boat. And that's just a it's a Navy term for an XO who wants his own ship. Got it from Crimson Tide. Great movie. If you want your own boat someday, you got to learn how to take over as the captain. And Kyrie is saying maybe it's time for me to get my own boat. Yeah, I had this boat in Cleveland before LeBron came back. And people do that, by the way. People do that with Kyrie and say, well, Kyrie can't lead a team on his own. He was here before LeBron, and they had the worst record in the league three straight years. Kyrie, he can't do that. Well, first 3 years of Kyrie Irving's career, if anybody cares to recall, Kyrie Irving was 19 and nowhere near ready to do what it would take to do to lead a team to a championship level. Number two, he was injured a lot during those first couple of years. Number three, the roster around him was flat-out garbage, baked over, warmed up in the sun with a fresh coat of stink on it. And number three, he is a much, much, much better player now at age 25 than he ever was at age 19 or 20 or 21. And maybe, as we look at Russell Westbrook carrying the Thunder into the playoffs, getting an MVP award, didn't have to win the title to get that, did he? As he sees Steph Curry leading the Warriors, getting a couple MVP awards and a title, maybe he's thinking to himself, if those guys can do it, I'm every bit as explosive offensively as they are. James Harden, an NBA MVP runner-up. Kyrie Irving couldn't even get a spot on the All-NBA first, second, or third team this year. Why? He's just the sidekick to LeBron. First team guards, point guards were Westbrook and Harden made the first team. Curry made the second team this year after winning two MVPs back-to-back, of course. You know, he's looking at it and saying, shoot, I can do what they can do as well as they can do it. I just need to not be in somebody's shadow. So maybe it's a combination of I'm not going to be the hostage here for LeBron James, and maybe I want to go ahead and get my own boat someday. But I'll tell you this, regardless of which one it is, they're going to trade him. You have no choice. Oh, I suppose Dan Gilbert could be just a jerk and say, you know what, screw you. LeBron is still here for this year. I'm keeping you. We're keeping this core together, and we could run with it. And I'll let you guys patch up your differences, and I'll let Ty Lue be the glue that holds everything together. If you guys got butthurt feelings, that's too bad for you. We're doing this thing. He could do that. But by and large, I don't believe he will do that. The main reason being, it would deteriorate quickly. By January, February at the latest, all-star time, half a season, it would deteriorate quickly. If you've got a guy who doesn't want to be there, and he's made it known he doesn't want to be there, and he's supposed to play alongside the guy who leaked it to everybody to make him look bad, the feelings of animosity are going to be so deep and so real, they'll never be able to make it work. And at that time, Dan Gilbert will indeed be compelled to trade Kyrie Irving, perhaps with less, leverage than he might have otherwise. So I think he's going to have to trade Kyrie Irving. And what he doesn't have to do, by the way, he doesn't have to trade him to one of those four preferred teams. He doesn't have to go to the Knicks or the Heat, or the Timberwolves, or the Spurs. Dan Gilbert is free to trade Kyrie Irving because Kyrie Irving has no trade clause in his contract. He can trade him wherever he wants to get the best deal from. If he wants to trade him to Sacramento and bury him in Nowheresville just to spite him, he can do that. He doesn't have to trade him to San Antonio so he can run alongside Kawhi Leonard, who is a very, very non-selfish superstar who might be fine to let Kyrie take kind of the majority of the shots and the load and then just do his thing. He might be fine with that. But Dan Gilbert doesn't have to accommodate that. He doesn't have to send him to Minnesota, which would be a dream lineup for them. Kyrie Irving at the point, four-time All-Star, rising star. Andrew Wiggins at the three, newly acquired star Jimmy Butler at the two, And, of course, Carl Anthony Towns, probably the best big in the game today, best young big in the game today, certainly, who averaged 25-5-12 last year. He doesn't have to give him that great team to go and, you know, win 55-60 games for and go push the Warriors in the West. He could trade him into oblivion. He could trade him to the Brooklyn Nets if he wants to and just say, screw you. But I do believe he will trade him, and he'll try to get the very, very best value for him, knowing full well that he is every bit as marketable as you heard Windhorst say in that opening montage. He is marketable, he is valuable, and he is going to bring a lot back if and when this trade does actually happen. So that's where we are with the Kyrie Irving story. I needed to lay all that that out for you in a montage, and we're going to talk with you, get your thoughts about it. We'll get Cushland's thoughts about it. We'll get Rick Nolan's thoughts about it. Nolan making his return after a three-month vacation, it seems. He's been gone way too long, so he covers the Cavaliers out there in Cleveland. We'll get his thoughts on that. But before we go to that, which will be after the bottom of the hour, SportsCenter, I want to do two things. Number one, I'm going to give you a pair of Mud Hens tickets to the game against Pawtucket on Wednesday at Fifth Third Field, and I'll give the pair right now to caller number four. Caller number four at 866-240-1065. So pick up the phone and dial that. And before I do that, I got to tell you about the wild stat of the day.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed, rolling onward now at 3:35. Thanks for being with us on the Extravaganza, talking a lot of Kyrie Irving today, a lot of that's a blockbuster. Bottom line, a trade hasn't been made yet, but it's a blockbuster because of who it is. It is Uncle Drew, who they are, three-time Eastern Conference defending champions, who his teammate is, LeBron James. It's a blockbuster solely because of the request, for goodness sakes. And that's where we are, talking about it with you at 866-240-1065. Joining us now to make some sense of it after 3.5 months of vacation time, Mr. Rick Nolan, covering the Cleveland Cavaliers out of Medina and Elyria, Ohio, out in Northeast Ohio. Hey, Mr. Nolan, good to have you back, buddy. How are you?
Good to be back. And I'm not promising to make any sense out of this, Bob, because it seems to be unsensible to me.
Yeah, well, you're not the only one who feels that way, Rick. I can promise you that. Let's talk a little bit about it first. You know, when you were on vacation, as I mentioned, we tried to get you on the last couple of weeks about some trade rumors and stuff, but you were out, and that's fine. You came back with a vengeance, though, on Facebook and said on Friday when this news broke about Kyrie, it happened actually during this show, you know, that time frame in the 4 o'clock hour last Friday. You got on Facebook right away and said something to the effect of, and I'll paraphrase you, got a lot to say, not much of it good, about Kyrie, but I will sit on it for a little while. And I said, sit on it till Monday at 3:35 if you would. And to an extent you have, so I'm going to let you let loose here. What is it that you have to say, and particularly tell us about the not good stuff?
Well, I mean, it makes no sense to me. I don't know where to start here.
Let me tell you this first. I listened to Kyrie
for 6 years talk about how important defense was and how important winning was and how anything he accomplished individually was secondary to that. And everything he's doing now flies completely in the face of all those statements. You're talking about a team that's been to three NBA finals and won a title that will be the odds-on favorite to get back to the finals again next year, particularly if he's on the team. And he wants to leave, reportedly because he wants to be a bigger focal point. And there's several things that are wrong with that logic, and we can go into him in a minute, foremost among being that I don't think a team with Kyrie as the focal point, a.k.a. the man or the best player, is going to be good enough to get to the NBA Finals, and certainly not to win them in today's NBA. I mean, if you lost in five games with LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love, what is Kyrie and Kristaps Porzingis going to do in New York? Go 37-45 and miss the playoffs.
No, I can't imagine a scenario like that. Rick, before we dive into the merits of that argument, if that is indeed his thinking, and at this point in time, we don't know if that is, you know, that's what some sources say. Other sources say that this is not about that. It's more about the LeBron is probably out after this coming season of 2017-2018, and Kyrie doesn't want to be stuck here holding the bag if LeBron leaves and puts him and everybody that's left behind in a bad situation. So rather than being held hostage by LeBron's constant one-year contract, is he coming back? Two-year contract this time, is he coming back? He doesn't want to be held hostage. He doesn't want to be left with a team. He wants to go find his own team, one that's more to his liking so that he can do whatever it is he thinks that he needs to do. Which of those two do you think is more likely, that he wants to be the big dog somewhere or that he wants to beat LeBron out of town?
Well, I don't buy the beat LeBron out of town theory because Kyrie doesn't get to dictate who he's traded to. Just because he wants to go to San Antonio doesn't mean the Cavs have to trade him there. Just because he wants to go to New York to me, it would have to be purely attention purposes because that team's decades away from winning an NBA championship.
Well, marketing purposes. Uncle Drew is big time.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. You know, what if he ends up in Sacramento, for crying out loud? Is he going to be better off there than he would be here if LeBron does, in fact, you know, fly the coop after next season? I don't buy the logic in that. I don't get it. I really don't. He's going to have every opportunity here, or he would have had every opportunity here, to be a bigger focal point. If LeBron stays or not, that might come to fruition. LeBron's probably got, you know, 2 years, three maybe, at the, you know, very top of his game as the number one man. Kyrie will be 28 years old in 3 years. Still a young guy. I just think it was a stunningly, unintelligent decision by a guy I thought would know better. And, you know, I don't buy either that LeBron and Kyrie don't get along. I don't buy, you know, there's a difference between Kyrie wanting to be a bigger focal point and the number one guy on the team than there is in him not liking LeBron. I thought they had a pretty decent relationship for the most part. I'm still struck by, and one of the reasons this stunned me so much, one of the lasting memories I actually had from Game 5 was when they were coming out of Oracle Arena and Kyrie stopped in the tunnel to wait for LeBron, and they hugged there, and it seemed like, you know, the inference to me is we're in this together, we're going to get this eventually, and who knows, that might have been goodbye then, although he didn't verbalize it to LeBron because this, you know, by all reports, blindsided LeBron as much as it did everyone else. So,
okay, let me ask some specific questions about this and see what your some theories really, and see what you think of these, because I'm looking at the All-NBA first, second, and third teams this year, and I'm looking for the name Kyrie Irving, and I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing the names of point guards like James Harden and Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry and Isaiah Thomas, and John Wall was even third team, and Kyrie's name is not there. Now, and I'm going to focus more specifically on the Steph Curry one of all of those. But you could make a case for the rest of them, too, because of what Westbrook was able to do as the focal point of his team. Didn't win a championship, got himself an MVP, made the playoffs. James Harden, and a runner-up MVP, made the playoffs, advanced a little bit, too. But Steph Curry, you know, these two guys have battled, even though they didn't guard each other 100% of the time, but for three straight years, they made it. And Kyrie was injured in the first one in 2015, we know. But these two guys were essentially, you know, compared to one another for the last three NBA finals. And a lot of people, myself included, felt like Kyrie Irving didn't take much of, if a backseat at all, to what he was able to, you know, as far as what he's able to do compared to Steph Curry. And if I'm Kyrie, tell me what you think of the theory here, Rick. I'm looking at Steph out west. Forget about KD this year. Just the first 2 years, they won 73 games, and then 60-plus games, won a championship, then lost in Game 7 of the championship, and he was the focal point. He's a superstar point guard who got a great shooter next to him, Klay Thompson, a do-everything guy like Draymond Green, and then a whole bunch of role players, and won massive numbers of games. If I'm Kyrie and I believe that I am as good as Steph Curry, and whether he is or is not is a matter of opinion, but if he believes he's Steph Curry, as good as Steph Curry, he sees that Steph can do that by just getting the right piece, the right shooter, the right do-everything guy, and a whole bunch of role players. He's probably thinking to himself, why do I have to continue to live here as the baby brother to LeBron James? LeBron gets all the accolades. I don't even make one of the first three NBA all-NBA teams. I had to hit the game-winning shot, by the way. I'm the clutch guy in the championship that we did get, and I get some love for that, but it's still LeBron's team. Maybe he's looking at Steph Curry and those kinds of guys and saying, damn it, if they can do it, I can do that.
Well, Steph Curry didn't do it without Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and above all else, Kevin Durant.
Well, he did for the first 2 years, that's what I mean. Before KD, Steph went to two finals and got two MVPs, by the way, by having a great shooter next to him, and then, like I said, Draymond Green, you know, a do-everything guy, and then go from there.
Well, my answer to Kyrie would be, you know, help your team be better. Quit being a low 50s win team in the regular season, and you know, their regular season awards. So, you know, you got to win more than 54, 51 games in the regular season a lot of times to get all NBA credit. We're in an era where there is just an overwhelming abundance of extremely talented guards, particularly point guards. Kyrie has made 13 previously, I believe. I just, you know, become a more well-rounded player. The writers that vote on those awards, writers and broadcasters, announcers, they see Kyrie. They see his game, and what he does is magnificent. And he may be the best one-on-one player in the league. He may be among the best finishers in the league. Actually, there's no maybe about it. He is among the best. But he's not a very good playmaker. He's a horrendous defender. He sometimes struggles with the concept of when to take over and when it's time to move the basketball. I would say learn to do those things better, and more recognition might follow. Particularly, you know, if you win and win big. I know that's not the most important thing for this team in the regular season, and they've showed it doesn't really matter as far as getting to the finals. But you know, that and overall stats or you know, individual stats are what these awards are based on. And you know, you're talking about a guy who averages, you know, six assists and next to no rebounds. You got to improve in those areas if you want to be regarded as one of the best overall guards in the league and not just the best one-on-one player in the league, I guess, is what I would say.
Do you think that any other Cavaliers players, Rick Noland, particularly enjoy the annual guessing game as to whether or not LeBron is going to re-up?
No, and then that's something I'm glad you brought up, because I wanted to emphasize it. You know, this isn't solely a Kyrie issue. It goes back to even prior to the LeBron's contract thing with, you know, Dan Gilbert muddling up the whole GM situation and not getting David Griffin back here. But yeah, I mean, LeBron, for all his greatness and for all the power he does have and often exercises, he could make things a whole lot easier on the Cavs and his teammates by committing long term to this team. You know, before it was always a 1 year deal, and this time it was a two. But you know, you can say if he signed for 3 or 4 or 5 years that things might be a whole lot easier for the Cavs when it comes to building a team, because they know he's committed to staying long term, and we don't continue to sign 35, 36, and 37-year-old players in Cleveland, then we have time to take a chance on a younger guy or two that might turn out to be a more athletic and better all-around player down the road. But all that being said, if it's true, and I think it is true, that Kyrie wants to be a bigger focal point and the number one guy, which I don't have much doubt is true, a long-term deal by LeBron doesn't really change Kyrie's outlook on the next couple of years at all. So I think, you know, it goes back to him. I don't know, you know, who he got advice from. I know he talked to Kobe, and I've had a lot of pro-Kyrie people tell me how well Kyrie or Kobe did once Shaq left.
That was going to be the comparison there, that, you know, those two guys were, some said, little brother, and neither one of them liked that, and they both wanted more credit than the other guy, and that led to the breakup of a three-peat team.
Yeah, I think it's just a completely dissimilar situation. Number one being the Lakers got some pretty good players for Shaq, and they had a pretty darn good team around Kobe back then, and even more so than that, Kobe in his prime was the best one-on-one defender in the league. The guy could just simply shut people down when he wanted to. He could rebound. You know, when he was moved to, he could be a pretty good passer, and he was just the ultimate competitor, ultimate do-whatever-it-takes-to-win guy. And I don't want to completely badmouth Kyrie, because he was a perfect fit on this team, I thought, where his playmaking deficiencies could be hidden, and where his one-on-one ability could be maximized, as long as it was done intelligently. But I just don't see him being the all-around player, or really, quite frankly, even close to the all-around player that Kobe was. You know, you're talking about a bigger guy, a stronger guy.
I don't think that's a fair thing, though, Rick. I don't think he's saying I'm Kobe. I don't think that's what he's saying at all.
Well, I'm only saying that
is two all-star players, you know, who won a championship together, him and LeBron, and Kobe and Shaq, and they couldn't get along as far as splitting up credit, so they split up. You know, that's the comparison. Not that one guy is as good as the other, because Kobe is an all-star.
Well,
there's no doubt about that.
I use that only for the analogy of if Kyrie is going to be the best player on whatever team he goes to, I'll be shocked if that team wins an NBA championship, unless the rest of the players are really, really, really good, like Pistons good with Isaiah Thomas or Chauncey Billups, just a completely strong team.
Well,
one
let's
through
talk
eight.
About that, because the four teams that he mentioned, two of them have, they don't fit.
Yeah, but Bob, yeah, well, great.
The
San Antonio has Kawhi.
Would be silly.
Exactly.
To try to do
that. So what does that tell you? Why does he want to go to Miami or New York then?
Yeah, I cannot put a finger on that at all. There makes no sense to me. But the Minnesota.
Well, the logical thing, though, with Miami and New York is in New York he has his brand. He's Kyrie.
Right. But from a competitive standpoint, it makes no sense.
Exactly.
Right. That's
exactly.
A Madison Avenue decision if he wanted to go to New York. I totally agree with that. His brand and his Uncle Drew and his marketing and all that stuff, he would get everything he wants there. But from a basketball competitive standpoint, Rick, you know, he named Minnesota and he named San Antonio, and those are the two that I find very intriguing, given the fact, well, first of all, according to multiple reports, Jimmy Butler in here tight, and Butler has immediately gone to Minnesota management and said, make it work, bring him to us. And he could arguably make the case of being the big dog, if you will, with incredibly talented two guard Jimmy Butler next to him, with the rising star Wiggins at the three, and then big Karl Anthony Towns, a 25 and 12 guy at the four. He's competitive for the playoffs, maybe in the West, you know, as one of the top two or three teams, perhaps, you know, with the Warriors. And he gets what he wants, because he might arguably be the biggest name among that group. Do you think if the
sure.
Now the Cavs, as you point out, Cavs have no obligation to trade him there, but would that fit the bill for him?
Honestly, for him personally, that's probably the best place for him to end up. But keep in mind, all those players you just mentioned aren't going to be there if he goes there. I I find it really hard to believe that the Cavs are going to let him go and not at least get Andrew Wiggins back as part of a trade or a multi-team trade in return.
Could very well be, yeah, unless somebody else is brought in.
If the Timberwolves can pull that off, though, it's ideal for him because he would be top dog, at least from a personality standpoint, because, you know, Butler and Wiggins aren't big marketing strive for attention guys, and Karl Anthony Towns is a, you know, quietly efficient, great, great young big man, but, you know, Kyrie could still get the commercials and the headlines and the attention that it seems to me like he craves. So, yeah, I think that would be ideal. Now, San Antonio is a little perplexing to me. Kawhi's basically, you know, a poor man's LeBron right now. He's clearly still the best player on that team if Kyrie goes to San Antonio, and nothing's going to change that anytime soon. It would be really interesting to watch Kyrie Irving play for Greg Popovich for a number of reasons. So we'll have to just see, I guess, how it all plays out. I wouldn't be totally shocked, though, about if it doesn't end up with any of those four teams. If I'm the Cavs, if I'm poor Kobe Altman, knowing whatever I do in the next 3 or 4 years that my contract's not getting renewed when it's done either.
Because nobody's is.
So, you know, if I'm him, if I'm Kobe Altman, though, I feel absolutely zero obligation to trade Kyrie to a place he wants to be traded to. I'm concerned only with getting the most I possibly can in return for him. And let's say this, too. I kind of tweeted this the other day, too. No matter how good of trade the Cavs managed to pull off, and I haven't bought many of the proposed ones that I've seen because one team always seems to be getting virtually nothing, and that's not going to work. But regardless of what they do manage to do, and I think it's more a matter of when than if. I mean, I think they will do their absolute best to trade Kyrie. I don't think they want a guy around here who doesn't want to be here. But I think.
Do you believe that LeBron leaked it, by the way, which is what a number of reports have said?
No, I honestly don't. I honestly don't. No. I think LeBron was as shocked by this as most other people were. But the point I was going to make was that, you know, as many shortcomings as Kyrie does have in his game, it's very hard for me to envision that the Cavs are going to be better after a trade than they would be had they just maintained what they have here now and Kyrie stayed. So I guess that's a praise of Kyrie. On this team, he did a lot of things that fit very well with the best player in the world, who's not always the easiest guy in the world to play with, and he learned to do that. And he learned to do that and still score 25 a game. It just confounds me, Bob. You're scoring 25 points and you want a bigger role. I want more credit. I want more credit is basically what I think he's saying. And I don't like to try to read people's minds, but that's pretty much all we can do in this instance. And, I wish him no ill will, but I think he may regret this decision down the road. Championships aren't nearly as easy to win as a lot of young kids think they are, and you were in a spot where you were going to compete for one at least next year, and your superstar player's chances of re-signing were probably a whole lot better with you on the team than they're going to be next summer if and when Kyrie's not on the team, I guess.
All right. Well, Rick Nolan, really good analysis. I really appreciate it. And you're right, we do have to do a lot of mental gymnastics here to try to figure out what his thought process is, because we don't know. He hasn't spoken on it, and if he does, it'll probably just be, you know, player media speak, where he's not going to give you his
Kyrie's been the ultimate master of that.
Yeah.
You know, he repeatedly says one thing. He says all the correct things, and then you watch his game, and then it says something entirely different. So, you know, I wish nothing against him. I hope it works out for him, but, you know, I think his best place is and was Cleveland, but this is one of those things I don't even know if you could undo it with some craftily written PR quotes and have him stay.
I don't think he wants to. I don't think he's regret. I don't think he has any of the regrets. I don't think he does either.
I don't think he does either. I think if you're going to do something of this magnitude, you've thought about it long and hard before you've walked into Dan Gilbert's office and asked for this trade. I don't know if you saw, there was actually reports that he considered doing this after 2016, but I think he kind of felt, you know, how bad is that going to look if I do it immediately after we win a championship? I look even worse than I ended up looking now.
Absolutely. You can't do that. You can't win a championship, hit the game-winning shot, and then not defend that championship. You can't. Nobody's ever done that.
I agree.
That would have been a bridge too far. Rick Nolan, who covers the Cavaliers and is trying to figure out what's in Kyrie's head, taking it every step of the way. Rick, thank you, my friend. Good to have you back off vacation. Hope you caught some good ones out there in the lake, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
All righty. Sounds good.
Thank you, Rick. Rick Nolan joining us. It is 4 o'clock. We got a sports summer coming, your sports center coming your way. But by the way, I mentioned vacation because Rick Nolan just came off of a 3-weeker. If you don't have your vacation planned yet, you've got to check out our website, 1065theticket.com, for a chance to register and win a $1,000 gift certificate from American Airlines. Good toward 2 round-trip tickets departing from Toledo Express via Charlotte, North Carolina, then on to anywhere in the continental U.S. It's all brought to you by Toledo Express Airport, the Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Just register one time at 1065theticket.com. All right, hour number 2 around the corner. We're going to get Cush in here and see what his thoughts on all this are. We want to get yours as well at 866-240-1065. What do you think is in Kyrie Irving's mind? What do you think is going to happen? We'll talk a little bit about the British Open and Jordan Spieth's amazing accomplishment yesterday as well. Some baseball, as we are now 1 week away, literally exactly 1 week away from the trade deadline at 4 o'clock, 1 week from today. It will be here in Major League Baseball, so we got some news on that as well, some rumors about Ian Kinsler and Justin Wilson. So second hour is jam-packed. Be here with us right here at 866-240-1065 on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Driven to left field, hammered as a matter of fact, and that ball is gone. Iglesias flexing his muscles. That is a 2-run bomb, and the Tigers have the lead.
And Boyd was pretty good in his last outing against the Kansas City Royals. He won that contest.
Oh, man, down he goes. Adios, Sano down on 3 pitches.
It was long, there's no question about that. We can play some long games, but I'll play as long as we have to, as long as we come up with a W. It was a little bit of a roller coaster. You know, we go up too early, they come right back with a home run the next half inning. We tacked on late, but they wouldn't go away, even to the point where they had the tying run on deck there in the bottom of the ninth after we had opened the lead up to 4. Willie was able to get it done in the end.
2-2 hit well, deep right. Bautista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
And their first walk-off win since the home opener back in April against the White Sox.
Corey Kluber on the mound, ready to go this afternoon. Kluber whips the side here in the second. Kluber swung on and missed. Strikeout number 14 for Kluber. Slow chopper to Gonzalez, to Ramirez, on to Santana. A game-ending double play. The Indians sweep the Blue Jays in convincing fashion.
He's kind of set the bar pretty high in this game. When you're consistent, that's a good thing. But when you set the bar and you're consistent at that level, he's one of the best in the game. It's nice to put his name in there every 5 days.
When I went from leading to all of a sudden tied, I had a little bit more calm for whatever reason, and didn't really seem like it was my day for the first 12, 13 holes. And then for whatever reason, we were able to regroup, stand on the tee on 14 and say, we stole a stroke the last hole. We're still in this thing. Let's make this a match play event going forward. They're all totally different experiences and they all felt completely different. But this one, after, you know, over 2 years off of the others and plenty of chances in between to win, this one is extremely, extremely satisfying. I will never forget this day. I mean, this is a special day in my life.
He wants to be number one. And, you know, sometimes you go backwards or downwards or to a weaker team or to a lesser team to be in that position. I openly admit that playing with LeBron James can be very frustrating at times. Most people would think that the side effects are manageable considering the overall thing that he does. But, okay, Kyrie doesn't feel that way. I question Kyrie's timing because I feel like the Cavs still have 1 year left of a great run. And if the Warriors stumble or there's an injury, they could hold another championship. And I wonder why Kyrie wouldn't want to go through one more year. But, hey, I'm not in his skin. He can make the choice. I think he's threatening his legacy a little bit here because he may view himself more like Kobe. Other people in the league view him more like Stephon Marbury, who broke up with Kevin Garnett and was never had the same opportunities in the NBA. But, okay, let him go out and do it on his own. I question his timing, but, okay, he's going to do it now. He's an incredibly attractive player, not only because he's 25 years old and an all-star, but this is something that's very important, especially in today's NBA. He is a marketable star. He is more marketable in some ways than Paul George and Jimmy Butler. He may not be a better player than those guys because those guys play both ends of the court. This guy is one of the most popular players in the world. His shoes sell very well. He attracts very well to young fans. And I'm going to just say that there are owners who are going to salivate at the business opportunity of trading for Kyrie Irving. And the Cavs' eyes are wide open on that. And that's going to affect their trade talk.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two underway now of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 Yon Ticket. Congratulations, by the way, to John Bias.
Indeed.
John Bias of Rossford is going to the Mountain Hens game on Wednesday. I got another pair of those to give away here in probably the next half hour, probably by 4:30. Mud Hens and Pawtucket at Fifth Third on Wednesday. So, by the way, speaking of the Mud Hens, might some prospects be coming their way? More MLB trade. I want to get back to Kyrie in a moment. But more MLB trade rumors. This one from our friends over at BlessYouBoys.com. Kush, I don't know if you saw this today. Did you take a look at the MLB trade rumors on BlessYouBoys?
I did kind of get a glimpse since that was the trading I thought we'd be talking about this week.
Yeah, but not so much. We're talking about the NBA and the demand from Kyrie Irving to be traded. But, yeah, this one's interesting. We all know that Justin Wilson is in demand, high demand, who has kind of become the Tigers' closer. Because a lot of teams obviously need bullpen help, whether it's a closer or not, if they want to clinch a division and make some noise. But according to, and this is Bless You Boys reacting to ESPN's report from Jerry Krasnick, by the way, so it's kind of got to give a dual credit here. The report is that anybody interested in taking Wilson might also have to take Ian Kinsler, which is a negative according to the good folks at Bless You Boys because it's not like they would be getting more back in return because of the addition of Kinsler. They might actually get less back because the reason for the Kinsler addition would be to dump his salary.
Right.
And anybody willing to take that salary would actually be giving less back in terms of prospects for what they could have gotten for Wilson alone.
That's part of the Tigers' double-edged sword. Goofy, you know, you
goofy,
want
weird way to do this.
Yeah, this is part of the double-edged sword the Tigers are kind of dealing with this trade deadline. We've summed this kind of thing up with the whole Justin Verlander stuff that's still, of course, out there, and there are obviously rumors on him too, and we'll get to those over the course of today and the week. But yeah, on the one hand, you want to. On the one hand, if you're the Tigers, you want to be able to cut some of this salary. Kinsler is one of those guys. He's not in that top five making 20, 25, 30 million the way Verlander and Miggy are. So you have that on the one hand. But on the other hand, yeah, you need an infusion of youth in the farm system. So it's a matter of. In any of these trades, which one would you want more? And the reason I kind of don't like the bundling idea with Kinsler and Justin Wilson is because, in theory, from everything we've been hearing, it's Justin Wilson, because he's young, cheap, and controllable, he's the one who would bring back the best haul. Because you wouldn't have
money. But he would bring back a better haul by himself.
Exactly.
Than packaged
exactly.
With Kinsler.
Yes, precisely.
And that's the frustrating part about it. And let me quote some from Rob Rogacki now, or I think it's Rogacki.
Rogacki,
thank you. Appreciate it.
106.5 Ticket.
By the way. Well, we got to get him on. I know we talked to some folks from Bless You Boys. But anyway, from Bless You Boys and Rob, over the past year, the Tigers have found little interest in their pricey stars on the trade market. We saw last offseason when they promised a younger and leaner but only ended up dealing Cameron Maben for a relief prospect. This year, J.D. Martinez got an underwhelming return from the Diamondbacks. One player immune from this has been reliever Justin Wilson, who has as many as 10 to 12 teams interested in acquiring his services. And that's what you want, right? A little bidding war. Get you a little bit more in the prospect department if you got teams going against one another. So that's the way it ought to be. But the Tigers might bungle this one, too. The Brewers are interested in both Wilson and Ian Kinsler, and according to Jerry Krasnick, as mentioned at ESPN, the Tigers may look to bundle the two of them together in order to save money on Kinsler's 2018 salary. But this appears, according to Krasnick on ESPN.com, this appears to be more of a case of Detroit trying to link Kinsler with Wilson and move a veteran salary. Kinsler has a $10 million club option for 2018 with a $5 million buyout. If the Brewers were to assume that financial obligation, it could lessen the player package Detroit receives for Wilson. No, just no. Not sure where to start with this, writes Robert Jackie. But here we go. We're going to yell at everybody. Regardless of how you feel about the actual return for JD, the reality is that there wasn't much of a market for his services. A few notable baseball scribes have written about the economics of this year's trade market, and power-hitting corner outfielder with questionable defense ranks fairly low on those power rankings. And by the way, Jim, I have to admit, I'm guilty of that. Going into this trade season, if you will, I really thought there would be a much better market for JD.
I did, too, at the start, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to his defensive liabilities, and you kind of have to, especially if you're talking about acquiring him as a rental player for a stretch run. You want a guy who's not going to be giving away runs in the outfield that he just got for you by blasting a home run.
That's the only part in Rob's little, that part of that paragraph that's not mentioned. It's power-hitting corner outfielder with questionable defense. Oh, and he'd also be a rental.
Right.
Both those come into play here. Right.
Throw that in there, too. So, you know, I really thought they'd get more for him than they did. Back to the article. Neither FanGraphs nor Beyond the Box Scores believe that the Tigers front office is grossly incompetent, though I'm not sure, given the latest rumor, and blame the light prospect haul and the lack of interest in Martinez's limited skill set. So that they, you know, I just thought that that bat, raking as he did since he came, started the season late, I just thought he'd bring a lot more for a team looking for a bat in the middle of the line.
You know, and as did I, but then as the rumors got more significant leading up to when JD was traded, what did we find out? Well, the biggest type teams that were interested were specifically the Diamondbacks and the Rockies looking to get an extra bat to go against those lefties, the Dodgers. And
the Indians were in that talk.
Right, but the top two still felt like Diamondbacks or Rockies because they wanted an extra bat against the left-handed heavy pitching of the Dodgers in the NL West specifically.
And I think the Indians just wanted a bat, period, because they just were not getting enough production from the likes of Jason Kipnis and Carlos Santana and Yan Gomes, et cetera.
And then Chisenhall's out until
you can probably
play a couple more weeks.
You can play around with the DH position a little bit, too, you know, since you're there and if he's a liability in the outfield. But anyway, he is where he is now. Going back to the article, we can't say the same for Wilson in terms of lack of interest. Reports vary on how many teams are actually involved, but just about every contender in baseball has shown some sort of interest in acquiring the hard-throwing left-hander over the past few weeks. This won't drum up the same elite prospect package that Andrew Miller or Aroldis Chapman warranted last year, but the increased demand and extra year of club control should increase Wilson's value beyond what Martinez returned. Bundling Kinsler's salary as an anchor of sorts, more on that in a second, however, tanks the value of the trade. Kinsler's contract shouldn't be a burden. As a fan of the team with a $200 million payroll, it's easy to say Kinsler's $10 million option for 2018 is just 5% of the payroll for this year and less than 10% of the 138 they've already committed to 2018 salaries. He would be a bigger chunk of Milwaukee's $60-odd million payroll, but not an unreasonable one, especially since the Brewers had a $110 million roster just a few years ago. Given that Kinsler is still a productive player, he has produced a 2.0 WAR in 80 games, not far off his recent pace. Picking up his option should be a no-brainer, whether he's dealt or not. Now I'm not so sure. We saw warning signs, and just for those who just turned on the radio, we're reading from blessyouguys.com, or I'm sorry, blessyouboys.com, an SB Nation site for the Tigers. We saw warning signs of the Tigers being more cost-conscious when they traded Maben to the Angels last November. However, Maben's BABIP inflated 2016 numbers and continued injury problems offered reasons for why the trade could have worked out in Detroit's favor. Maben's 2017 performance doesn't necessarily indict the Tigers front office. His OPS is down nearly 100 points from last year, but this latest report does. Sabotaging a potential trade return to save $10 million would be a major error on Detroit's part, and doubly so if they also refuse to kick in any money in a hypothetical Justin Verlander trade. All right, I'm going to pause there before the summary, Kush, because there's a lot of meat on that bone.
Yeah.
What they're arguing on Bless You Boys, and I think it's valuable, don't make the same mistake that you made with, you know, with Maben, or that you could have made. Let me rephrase that. When it comes to Kinsler and Justin Wilson, first of all, Kinsler is having a semi-decent season. That 2.0 war in 80 games is not far off his recent pace. He should be worth that $10 million for somebody else to pick up and not hurt the trade value haul for Justin Wilson. Sabotaging a trade based on that $10 million doesn't make sense, and especially if you double down on the Verlander part. That last part is what interests me, because if they do say, sorry, we're not paying any of what Verlander is owed, if you want him, you take him and his contract, then you're just not going to get any kind of a trade package,
right,
in terms of the stocking of the system that they need to do. You're not going to get anything for him much more than you will Wilson if you insist on this Kinsler deal.
Yeah, and that's something, at least on the Verlander front, that we've been arguing, at least you and me on this show, when we've talked about this in these last couple weeks, that's the real sad key to the Verlander trade rumors, is how much are the Tigers going to eat? The more, in theory, it feels like the more the Tigers would be willing to eat, the better prospect package they would get.
You'd be buying prospects for some of Justin Verlander's money, essentially.
And of course, he being the, you know, you Tigers fans, in a way, even if they don't want to admit it out loud, deep down they feel, yeah, we better get a good return. He's been the face of the franchise. The way one guy worded it to me over the weekend, you know, hanging out talking to people at Marathon Classic on the weekend, was, he's the face of the franchise. We better be getting something for us. He's the face of the franchise since they became relevant again, which was 06, which was Verlander's rookie year.
No question about it. And so you better get something good for it, even if it means you have to kind of pay for it,
right,
in the form of paying some of that salary. Look, if they end up trading for their top four tradable commodities, which going into this period, we all agreed, we're Wilson and Verlander and Kinsler and Martinez. Maybe not in that order. You can put them in whatever order you want. If they go into this thinking they're the four most tradable commodities, and you get less than what the market should bear in prospects for all four of them, talk about all-time incompetence. Now, I'm not trying to rip Al Avila, because I don't know if he has full decision-making authority on these kinds of things, especially as it pertains to how much money we'll pick up. But you got an underwhelming haul from JD. If you do the Wilson-Kinsler package and Kinsler's inclusion in it because of the money, drops down the amount of prospects and the quality of the prospects you can get for Wilson. And then you're just not willing to pay much on Verlander, so that drops down the prospect haul there. You end up trading your four most marketable commodities for, I don't want to say bottom, you know, basement, bargain, bin, you know, prospects, but you're not going to get the top prospects or the number of prospects that you would probably have imagined going in.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. And these are the interesting waters that the Tigers are trying to tread here, because you need to revamp the farm system. You need to clear out some of the salary. We know it's not all going to go away. I mean, you know, for example, the biggest player in terms of salary we all know is not going anywhere, Miguel Cabrera, so you're still going to obviously have some of these guys. You're not going to be able to trade all of the big contracts they have, but you got to get some stuff to revamp some of the farm system, which is on the lower rung of baseball because of the valued prospects they have. They've traded away in the last four, five, 6 years to stay competitive. And you need to get the payroll down. And you obviously don't want to end up in a situation, though, where you've completely wrecked it all and you're losing 100 games 3 years in a row like the Astros did a few years back, which is obviously paying off for them now. That's why this trade deadline and this coming hot stove in November, December, January is probably the most important in the last 10 years for the Tigers, because it's going to tell us, okay, how long will it take for then the Tigers to truly be, you know, a contender type again, or are we staring 300 lost seasons in the face?
Well, I'll summarize what you just said. This period between now and the 31st and the hot stove season to come in November are probably the most important in the last 10 years. I'm quoting you now.
Okay.
The last 10 years for the Tiger, because they will literally determine the next 10 years of the Tigers.
Yeah.
That's just a summary of what you just said.
Basically.
And so it is that big, because you know, the run that they made that they didn't quite finish off to get there with Mike Ilitch, you know, while he was still running the show. And the owner, they took on an awful lot of salary and sacrificed an awful lot of prospects, making
right.
headline deals of their own to try to get over the top. And because of that, the cupboard is now, relatively yeah. speaking, bare. And if they don't strike the right notes here in this trading period, and as you say in Hot Stove, well, it's going to be a long 10 years to come, too. So
absolutely.
That's just reality. A summary, going back to the good folks at blessyouboys.com. Summary of this potential Wilson-Kinsler pairing, it's bad. While rumors like this should often be taken with a grain of salt, we've seen a very consistent pattern lately. Nothing we've seen or heard from the Tigers over the past month has given me any reason to believe that they are capable of retooling this roster in short order. From the poor return on JD, bad market or not, they should have done better, to a refusal to kick in trade money, the Tigers are in a bad position. They've repeatedly told the media that shedding payroll isn't their primary goal, but their actions behind the scenes suggest otherwise. If they aren't capable of maximizing the value of their few trade assets, as I just mentioned those four, the inevitable rebuild, what we've heard about for half a decade, could be even worse than we'd hope. So that's from Bless You Boys, and obviously we're going to talk much, much more with those folks about this. Maybe we'll get Rob on soon about what it means between now and July 31st. But keep your eyes open. If the reports... And we should again point out, Bless You Boys, reacting here to ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
ESPN, Jerry Krasnick, they're the ones reporting that the Tigers are
right.
trying to link or willing to link, if not trying to link, Justin Wilson and Ian Kinsler together in a trade. The direct quote is not very long from Krasnick. I'll just read it. The Brewers, who are desperately trying to turn things around, are actively exploring both starter and relief options. As ESPN's Buster Olney reported, they've also talked to Detroit about second baseman Ian Kinsler, but this appears to be more of a case of Detroit trying to link Kinsler with Justin Wilson and move a veteran salary. The Brewers would love to have Kinsler, but pitching is their main priority at the moment. Kinsler has a $10 million club option, as we noted, for 2018 with a $5 million buyout. If the Brewers were to assume that financial obligation, it would lessen the player package Detroit receives for Wilson. So Krasnick essentially getting the credit for that report, and then Bless You Boys responding to it. Okay, that's a lot of Tigers baseball notes here, not having anything to do with games. They do host Kansas City tonight. The Indians host Cincinnati in a one-gamer, as Jim just told you about in the last update. We'll get another update coming up here right around the corner. And I want to tell you, by the way, about a tremendous opportunity to watch some racing up at MIS. ESPN Moto 65, the ticket, a chance for you to attend the races at Michigan International Speedway the weekend of August 11th. Up for grabs, tickets to Friday qualifying, tickets to the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series on Saturday, and then tickets to the Pure Michigan 400 on Sunday. To qualify, here's what you got to do. Text MIS ticket together, all one word, MIS ticket, to this short code, 64636. That's all you got to do to qualify for that great grand prize. Good luck from Michigan International Speedway and Toledo Sports Leader ESPN 107.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling onward are we. Take you right up until 5 o'clock in drive time with Mike Miller. Mike is probably going to be mad. He's not in that Taj Mahal that is the media tent down there.
Oh, that was a slick setup.
Didn't I tell you when I talked to you on Thursday
Friday
when you got down there on the weekend that you'd be amazed?
I was indeed.
I mean, they really did. And, you know, lots of credit. I mean, obviously all of the organizers out there at Highland Meadows for the Classic, you know, deserve credit. But our man, Jim Heller, is, you know, of course, the media guy. And his assistant, Randy, and he told me that he went to bat telling them he wanted to build the Taj Mahal for the media there in terms of what they could. And they did a great
mission
job.
Mission accomplished on that one.
I mean, that was sweltering. That heat was really, really high. Humidity was really high, mostly, over the course of the week there at Highland Meadows, particularly over the four rounds, you know, Thursday through Sunday. And it was so comfortable there. Jim, didn't I tell you, you couldn't hear the air conditioner?
Yep.
They had the little, you know, kind of half-encased plexiglass broadcast booths for us in there.
Oh, I loved it.
It was. It was just a great setup. So
yeah, the only downside, that humidity you were talking about, it never seems to fail at the marathon. We had fun with this yesterday, by the way. It's either you get a playoff or at some point you get a little rain delay.
Yep.
And we had that at the very end of the final round yesterday.
But you know what? I was expecting it Friday and Saturday. Really.
Yeah. Me
you know,
too.
I mean, not that I'm a meteorologist, but you know, if I talk to Jim, he's like, "We got fingers crossed it's all going to hold off," and it almost did. It almost did, but with that humidity, you're right. It's great. Anyway, it was a great time, and Mike Miller's got back at his normal location. He's got your drive time coming up. Okay, I want to go back to the NBA and the news of the Kyrie Irving trade demand, which we had almost, Jim, at about this hour on Friday.
I remember first texting you about this. I said something effective, and then this just happened, and that was like 3:50 or something.
Yeah, it was somewhere in that neighborhood, and so here we are. We've had kind of 4 days to digest it now, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and now today, to talk about this. And what I have in front of me is some very interesting stuff about the potential trade packages for Kyrie Irving, if indeed this is to happen.
Is this Zach Lowe's article?
I'm sorry?
Is this Zach Lowe's article?
No, this is actually, this one is out of... This is from Cleveland.com.
Oh, okay.
Cavaliers writers out there.
I'm looking at the Zach Lowe version from ESPN.com of a very similar thing. He's sifting through all the possible packages that could be out there.
Well, let me just throw a few of them out there. And
go right ahead.
See, just very brief reactions to them, because I want to get to my ultimate point about Kyrie Irving in a moment. In a potential trade with the Jazz, and again, we're not even just looking at the four teams that Kyrie has expressed he would like to go to, because they are under no obligation. He has no trade refusal rights. He does not have a no-trade clause in his contract, so they can send him wherever they want, including to a place like Utah, which losing Gordon Hayward, of course, would be very interesting to them, to try to get an all-star score, actually improve on the scoring that Gordon Hayward would have left behind. And here's the potential deal.
Okay.
Utah gets Kyrie Irving along with Iman Shumpert, which is no big loss, and Channing Frye, which, as we saw in the finals, was really no big loss because they hardly even used him. Cleveland would get Ricky Rubio, so that's your point guard replacement, a pass-first guy, by the way, as you know with Rubio,
yes,
to LeBron, Kevin Love, and J.R. Smith, which is interesting. Jeff Withey, Rodney Hood, and Derek Favors would all be coming back over in a deal. All these trades are successful, according to the trade, the machine.
Little trade machine, which you need for the NBA, because salary's got to be just about equal, as we know.
Exactly. Now, Rubio would not be a perfect fit, but he would be an interesting fit, because at least for a short term, because he's a pass-first guy, as I said. He is not a tremendously successful outside shooter the way Kyrie Irving was, but you're not going to be able to get Kyrie Irving for Kyrie Irving.
Right.
You're going to have to give something up here. But he is a very good passer. And, again, he will find Kevin Love in the right spots, and certainly LeBron James in the right spots. So that's an interesting one to me.
Okay.
Some of the other guys, not necessarily, hugely important in the deal. In a prospective deal with the Phoenix Suns, Kyrie Irving goes to Phoenix alone. In return, Eric Bledsoe, Josh Jackson, the number one pick that they just got, who is a very, very athletic front court player.
Indeed.
And a 2018 first-round pick of the Suns. They would all come to Cleveland in exchange. The Suns have been in the lottery the last 7 years, building on a young, promising roster to one day become a Western Conference contender again. They also have been trying to lure a star in free agency, missing out on LaMarcus Aldridge a few years ago, watching Blake Griffin stay in place in Los Angeles this offseason. Perhaps this is their best chance to reel in a difference maker, which you need in the West, which would be Kyrie Irving. In return, Bledsoe, who is a Rich Paul client, by the way, that LeBron James mentors and views as a little brother, which may impact LeBron's decision after next year as to whether or not he wants to stay. The personality conflicts that exist between James and Irving wouldn't be an issue with Bledsoe. Bledsoe is coming off of a career high in points at 21.1 points per game. And assists 6.3, also not much of an outside shooter, kind of like Rubio, like we talked about, but he's a tough, hard-nosed defender, which Irving was not, and again, can get inside and score. Then you add Josh Jackson, who's a rookie. He's going to take some time to get polished, if you will, but he's versatile and could bring a lot, and then 2018's first-round pick looking to the future. So that's not a bad little haul there. That trade is also successful. According to the trade machine, Kush. Any thoughts on that one?
None of these are that bad, and keep going on, because they all kind of tie into what I've been stewing over over the weekend. So continue.
The Nuggets send Kyrie to the Nuggets, which would be just a disaster for him, because he wouldn't be anywhere close to being. Well, then again, he wouldn't be anywhere close to being a competitor for a championship or a contender in New York either.
But Denver wants to make the playoffs again.
They do. That's all they want to do is get back there. Cleveland would get Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, and Wilson Chandler in that particular deal. Harris averaged a career-high 14.9 points, 3.1 rebounds a game, and shot 50% from the floor last season. Murray was the seventh pick in the draft last year. Got more comfortable as the season progressed, according to this analysis. and eventually was named second-team All-Rookie. He would be the Cavaliers' much-needed playmaker off the bench and has outside shooting prowess. And then Wilson Chandler is a versatile wing, the kind of player that would fit in well in a finals matchup against the Warriors if they got back. That one gets me a little less excited than some of the others, but I wanted to throw it out there.
Yeah.
This one is interesting as well with the Charlotte Hornets staying in the East now. Kemba Walker and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist for Kyrie Irving and Iman Shumpert to make this salary situation work. Kemba Walker, as we know, had a near all-star campaign, 23.2 points a game, really only 2 points off of what Kyrie was scoring
right
last year. And in fact, had a player efficiency rating just about at the same as Kyrie Irving as well. He's a score first guy like Kyrie. You can get buckets at every level, mid-range, around the rim, and of course deep. And he would slide pretty much right into Irving's old spot. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist would be, in addition, described as having a funky shot, but he would slide into a lesser Swiss Army knife role, showing off his unique combination of length, athleticism, quick hands, and versatility, all of which made him a star at Kentucky. And most importantly, he wouldn't have the same expectations on him as he does in Charlotte as a number two pick, and would give Cleveland another capable defender in a potential finals matchup with Golden State. So that's Charlotte, and then we'll get to, I've only got a couple more here. I'm going to skip over actually one of them that I think is just a little bit irrelevant to me, and that would be with Milwaukee for Malcolm Brogdon, Chris Middleton, and John Henson. There is a three-team blockbuster as well that they throw in here that would include Phoenix and New York. Phoenix, ironically, would be the team that lands Kyrie Irving here, not the New York Knicks. The Knicks would get Iman Shumpert back, Channing Frye.
They also had Channing Frye once upon a time.
Right, they've been there twice. Yep. Marquise Chris and a 2018 first-round pick, and the Cavs would get Eric Bledsoe from the Suns and Carmelo Anthony from the Knicks. So you get Bledsoe, and we already talked about how he would fit, and then Carmelo, who would be a different kind of fit, considering he's a three-wing player, and I'm not really certain exactly how that would space for the Cavaliers. Miami, which is one of the two locations identified by, or four locations, two in the East, identified by Kyrie, they would give Cleveland Goran Dragic, Justice Winslow, and Josh Richardson, and Miami would just get Kyrie Irving. Kyrie and Dion Waiters reunited. How about that?
Oh, it worked so well the first time.
Waiters was so adamant that he should be getting the playing time and the shots. He was better than Kyrie Irving, and, well, no, you're not. But anyway, it would be interesting there. Dragic would give the Cavaliers a capable starting point guard, one with postseason experience and comfort in an up-tempo style preferred by Tyronn Lue. Winslow, 10th overall pick in the 2015 draft, needs to improve his jumper. Problem since he left Duke, but he has the length and bulk to defend multiple positions and would help their better desire to get better defensively. Richardson would be an intriguing defensive mind young piece with a favorable contract. So just to add in. And then finally, the biggest names, in my opinion, are involved in this Minnesota deal. The Timberwolves would get Kyrie as he wants, but he would not be able to play alongside Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Jimmy Butler. Because in this deal, proposed anyway, Cleveland would get Wiggins.
How funny would that be?
Back again with Kevin Love.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. Tell me how many people 3 years ago would have bought this.
Never.
Line.
I wouldn't have. Andrew Wiggins, Tyus Jones, and Georgiou Dieng would be.
And Tyus Jones was technically drafted by the Cavs before they sent him to Minnesota.
There you go. So, and just to throw it out there, this would be a potential conflict in a deal like this. Minnesota just paid a hefty price for Jeff Teague, believing he would be the team's lead guard for the foreseeable future. But Kyrie represents a unique opportunity for the Wolves, and that's why Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns are reportedly recruiting Irving and going to their front office saying, do what you've got to do to get him here.
Yeah. The side note on that deal, by the way, because as you mentioned, it includes like Tyus Jones and such.
Yes.
I think Cavs fans would prefer Jeff Teague, but the note there is, they just signed him to a free agent deal. I mean, Minnesota is not legally allowed by NBA rules to even to consider trading him until mid-season of this year, so that ain't happening.
Okay, well that's interesting to know.
That's why we're curious why Jeff Teague's name wouldn't pop up any of the Timberwolves stuff that you'll hear.
Yeah.
That's why.
The other thing to kind of put a kibosh on a deal like this is Wiggins has 1 year left on his rookie deal, then he could become a restricted free agent. His
Correct.
Long-term intentions are to work, are hard to decipher. Nobody really knows, and there might be bad blood with the Cavaliers since they made him the number one pick and then traded him right away, saying we'd rather have Kevin Love right now. He might have liked to play with LeBron James, for example, so there might be a problem there. But the bottom line is, if they traded for Wiggins, they could lose Kyrie, LeBron, and Wiggins in one short stretch of time, which would essentially destroy the franchise. So you wouldn't want to run a risk like that. So those are just some of the possibilities. Now, Kush, you said you had something you were looking at.
Well, the thing that I'm looking at with a lot of these deals, and by the way, a lot of these deals, the Cavs may be in a position to snag a first-round draft pick out of those as well. And I know you're my overall usually correct opinions about the NBA draft, but since the Cavs have basically no draft picks, any first-round draft pick down the line would actually help. As I've been stewing on this over the weekend, first, the small thing, and I mentioned in my Sports Center that the Cavs and Cody Altman and Gilbert are meeting with Derrick Rose. Incidentally, for anybody like myself early last week who was wondering, why are the Cavs talking to Derrick Rose? Well, in light of the Kyrie news from Friday and beyond, suddenly that whole thing
and
makes
a whole bunch.
And that,
of course, happened. By the way, the news broke to the media Friday, but apparently the request was made the previous week.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was sat on for a long time before it leaked. And again, some say LeBron James leaked it, which may or may not be true, but the point is they have known for a while, so that could be exactly why they were talking
about it. Right. My point is, suddenly that whole thing makes a whole bunch of sense now. I mean, he wouldn't be, you know, he's got his injuries and all the things we talked about with Derrick Rose, but for anybody scratching their head last week, why would the Cavs want Derrick Rose? Suddenly that whole thing makes a whole bunch of sense. And incidentally, given what's gone down, because as you correctly point out, Bob, fans and we in the media only learned about this Friday, but the Cavs were informed over a week ago plus, so they've had a little time to start thinking about this. I got to say, if you can convince him for 1 year on the vet minimum, please do so, by the by, given all of this that's gone down. But the other thing that's popped into my head about
which,
all this,
by the way, there might be a wrinkle in that, too, considering what kind of a trade they were to make. Because if they get a point guard coming back for Kyrie, that would kind of muddy the water a little bit, depending on how Derrick Rose intended to be used.
Good point, because if you don't get a point guard back, trade Kyrie and sign Derrick Rose, well, Derrick Rose is your starter now, by the by, instead of coming off the bench like we would
thought. And a starter on a one-year deal, by the way, in which case, if he has a good year, he's going to go back on the market, and you may lose him, too, you know, unless you're willing to pay some sort of a huge deal, which I would not do.
But I'm glad you pointed out the lose him, too, because, sadly, a lot of this, to me, as I've been able to stew on this over the weekend, and I'm less mad at Kyrie than I was on, you know, say, Friday, when it's like, what are you doing, is, now,
I'm not mad at him at all, by the way.
Right.
Only because I can understand where his mindset is.
Sure.
But please, go ahead.
But what's one of the things that's been our theme whenever we brought up Cavs moves since the end of the finals? If you're Dan Gilbert, what position do you not want to be in? LeBron bolts next summer, and you're a 19-63 laughingstock team again, right? And we were pointing out, we'd been talking at times, well, that team, a post-LeBron team, you'd still have Irving and Love, and in the crummy Eastern Conference, that should still be a team that not only makes the playoffs, but at least advances one round. And you should still blatantly, if you're Dan Gilbert, have that goal. You can't let this turn into a 19-63 type team again.
No.
And one of the other tidbits that came out over the weekend involved in all this is LeBron makes more or less said that I'm not going to waive my no trade clause. I'm playing for Cleveland for another chance at a title this year. So if he does walk, which seems probable, of course, next summer, then you're going to lose him for nothing and possibly bring out this bad scenario. But as I've been thinking more and more about the Kyrie part of it, and you're going through all these deals, and I'm starting to look up on the little sites to keep track of their contracts. Most of these guys, even though there's some that are into restricted free agency or player options or what have you, they're all signed through seemingly this coming season, 17-18 and 18-19. Kind of the same that Kyrie's before his player option kicks in on his current deal, right? And one thing that I keep thinking about is this whole thing with Kyrie could actually turn into a weird blessing in disguise. And here's what I mean by that. Cavs fans are understandably worried that, you know, LeBron bolts and, oh my goodness, we're going to have a last place team just like after he left the first time. And then, you know, Kevin Love and, you know, Kyrie, you're going to have to get rid of them too. By being in a position where you're now kind of almost forced, no matter who it's to trade Kyrie now while he has multiple years left on his deal instead of, say, the Paul George situation that Indiana dealt with, you should be able to get more back, right? That's what some of these deals that you were just talking about are.
Yeah.
And what those deals do, especially if you can get some team to cough up a first-round pick on top of all that and send it the Cavs' way as well, is you're laying the groundwork in a way that wasn't able to be done in 2010 when LeBron made his decision for Miami to keep a semi-competitive, won't be a championship-contending team, but it won't be a 60-65 loss team right out the gate again. And you can have some pieces, like take the Denver, you know, possibility that you threw out there. Where is he at? The Jamal Murray, he's on a rookie contract. So he signed for their team options for 3 more years, and you're talking not even $5 million. So you'd get players that are signed for longer, and you can kind of start having an idea of what a post-LeBron team could look like. And maybe you don't even have to trade Kevin Love in that situation, by the by, anymore. And incidentally, side note, that hasn't been brought up yet, I think we all better be expecting the best season out of Kevin Love this coming year as a Cleveland Cavalier, because guess what? He's the number two right now, by the by. That really hasn't been brought up much. It
well,
will
that
be
depends
later.
On who plays point guard.
Touche. But
because remember, you know, if they get a score first point guard in some of those deals that we're talking about, there are score first point guards there. He still might be the guy waiting in the corner for his opportunity, and a lot of his damage is going to be done on offensive rebounds and putbacks. So we'll see about that. But yeah, assuming that they have a pass first point guard in like a Rubio situation, like we kind of just described, yes, you would expect him to see the ball a lot more and get a lot more opportunities to score.
The grand point I'm trying to make real quick, and I know I just had to play the music because we're running out of time, is that you now have, because Kyrie is doing this now, as opposed to, say, next year when he'd be in the Paul George Indiana situation, you can get more value. You can start putting the foundational pieces for a post-LeBron situation to prevent you from automatically going, LeBron leaves and right away you're a 65-loss team, which I think we both agree that's the one thing Dan Gilbert does not want to have happen. He saw how that movie played once. He doesn't want to see that again.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why I think some of the decisions he is making have been made, even with respect to Griffin. I think he's thinking about life after LeBron already, because he expects LeBron to leave and he's not going to get caught holding the bag again. That's just how I feel about it. All right, that's all the time. I wanted to talk more about Kyrie, but you talked out the last 94 minutes of the show. So, all right, maybe it felt like that. But that's okay, because it was good points and all the way around. And we're going to get some new perspectives on this too, Kush. There's a lot of other really interesting opinions about why Kyrie would be doing this, all floating around people close to the Cavaliers. So we'll talk more about that tomorrow. Obviously, we'll keep our eye on what's going on in the MLB trade situation, the Kinsler-Wilson potential tandem deal. We'll update that tomorrow as well. We'll see if the Indians get active in that market, and we'll have more. Oh, you know what, Kush? We got more Mudhens tickets
we
right now.
We do. Let's do it.
On the way out the door, let me give away two more pair of tickets to Mudhens Pawtucket Wednesday at 5th Third. Callers 6 and 7 this time on the way out the door. 6 and 7. Those are for you as we get you ready now for drive time. Coming your way on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Have a great one.